Hi there, I'm Jason Schulman, and this is New Books in Australian and New Zealand Studies. My guest today is Tony Hughes-Daith. He's Associate Professor of English and Cultural Studies at the University of Western Australia. He's here to talk about his new book, Like Nothing on This Earth, A Literary History of the Wheat Belt. It was published in March 2017 by the University of Western Australia Publishing. Tony, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on. So Tony, what is the Western Australia Wheat Belt?
Okay, so in the 20th century, the state of Western Australia experienced a large agricultural expansion. It was an area in the southwest of Australia which was cleared for the production of grain in about two 30-year periods between 1900 and 1930 and just after World War II. And the area of land that was cleared is roughly the size of Britain, so it's a relatively substantial area, and it transformed the economic fortunes of Western Australia.
How did those two periods kind of come about? Did someone have an idea to use this land for a new purpose?
It had always been the idea when Western Australia was first settled in 1829 for it to be an agricultural colony, but the for various reasons didn't eventuate, mainly in terms of the comparative, I suppose the competition from other similarly purposed colonies in North America and Eastern Australia and Southern Africa. West Australia, due to its remoteness and poor soils, really didn't take off. So it was really a gold rush that happened at the end of the 19th century in Western Australia that brought hundreds of thousands of people to the colony, and then as it became the state in 1901, and provided the labour to undertake what had always been wished for, which was to turn Western Australia into a closely settled agricultural land.
Obviously, wheat is important because it, you know, can provide us food, but what did growing wheat mean to Australia when the nation was founded?
Early part of Australia's, iconic agricultural history was a pastoral mythology, so things to do with sheep and cattle and droving and shearing and these sorts of things. The growing of grain wasn't particularly well regarded. I think it had certain associations with European feudalism and toil, and it wasn't. But with the beginning of the 20th century, a kind of a new ideology of wheat growing sprang rapidly into existence, and it became quite emotive. So people felt like they were really feeding the people of the world by growing wheat, and there was a whole romance around wheat as a natural and improving way of living. So yeah, it fed into the new national. Australia became a nation in 1901, so it fed into Australian nationalism, but it also fed into a certain agrarian impulses within settler colonialism in Australia.
Your book looked at the creative writing of those who lived in the Wheat Belt at various points in their lives and then wrote about that experience. Why a literary or creative look at the Wheat Belt rather than a strictly economic or geological one?
Well, I'm a literary person by profession, I suppose, and I've always been interested in the relationship between literature and culture. And when I read when I also became interested in the Wheat Belt, I kind of kept meeting a certain sort of triumphalist history about how the land was conquered and grain production became ever greater, and technological advantages were transforming the landscape and so on. But I guess it left me wondering, what did this all feel like to people? And I feel that only literature provides an interior picture of social events or socio-ecological events like the creation of the Wheat Belt. So that's why I turned to literature, and I think that's a case I make in the book itself, that literature provides a unique document in terms of understanding how people felt about things. I was particularly interested in the way that people felt about the act of clearing. Just as a bit of a background, it wasn't a prairie landscape that people just got out their ploughs and started swapping one kind of grass for another. The southwest of Western Australia is an open woodland, but it's a highly evolved and densely speciated ecosystem, which has existed for millions of years. So it was actually a huge loss when it was cut and burnt and destroyed to create the fields. So I was interested in how that was documented, I guess, from the inside, and I turned to literature for trying to understand that.
Mm-hmm. And you selected 11 writers who have lived in and written about the wheat belt from its beginnings in the early 1900s until the 21st century. How did you select the writers?
There's probably the most prominent writers, more or less, but I was also trying to step through the period. So I tried to get writers to speak, I guess, to successive decades of the 20th century, really. So I was trying to find writing that gave us a picture into the turn of the century period, the period immediately before the war and after the Great War, that is, and just kind of move through decade by decade. The writers overlap a fair amount, it must be said, but there was that chronology that I wanted to cover, I suppose, and use the writers to provide a sort of insight into each of those moments. But, yeah, they're also probably, with one or two exceptions, the most prominent writers.
Did the length of stay in the Wheat Belt or when in their lives they lived in the Wheat Belt matter for when they wrote about the Wheat Belt?
There are a number of variables, I guess, but I think that those two things, the time in their life that they stayed and the length are certainly amongst them. It seemed to matter if you were born there, and so I have a writer like Dorothy Hewitt who was born there and spent the first 11 years of her life there and never went back, really, but never stopped writing about the Wheat Belt. So sometimes you get a child's impression. Albert Facey is another one you get a child's view, and the particular forms of particular way that acts on memory, I suppose, if it's a childhood experience. Yeah, I think sometimes people like Peter Cowan and Jack Davis, to take two other examples, they worked there, so they came to it in their adult lives. And So I think there were different ways in which people were involved in the Wheat Belt, and that did affect them. But it was also, I suppose, when they were writing. So sometimes people were writing 40 years after the point at which they had lived in the Wheat Belt. So the available literary forms at that time had changed as well. So that's another thing that's going on in the book. We have literary modernism, we have social realism, we have expressionist drama, postmodern poetry. So quite a range of different literary forms to work with.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Jack Davis, and you write that Jack Davis allowed us to see the Black Wheat Belt for the first time. Can you tell us a little bit about who he is and his work?
So Jack Davis was part of that generation of Aboriginal intellectuals that came into prominence in the lead-up to the 1967 referendum to recognise Aboriginal citizenship. So he was part of that. He'd spent the early part of his life in the southwest. His father worked in the timber mill and was actually a citizen, but was an Aboriginal man from the Pilbara. Jack Davis had gone with his brother, been sent by his father to go and learn agricultural work at a place called Moore River Native Settlement, which is a the notorious, Aboriginal concentration camp, as it came to be viewed in later years. But he went in good faith to think he was learning agriculture, but quickly apprehended that this was little more than a prison camp. Then he went into the wheat belt. After his father died, he went with his mother's relatives and lived with the Noongar people, and did kind of seasonal agricultural work that was done by Indigenous people there, which involved clearing and fencing and some of the basic work of putting the wheat belt together. But in terms of a literary figure, after being a kind of politician and activist, I suppose, he started writing poetry in the 70s and then wrote a series of plays, No Sugar, The Dreamers, Kulak, which are really sort of landmark Aboriginal plays. They're much studied at high school now in Australia, and he kind of came to prominence there, and wrote about New Norcia and the native settlement at Moore River. And it's through Jack Davis in lots of ways that we understand the period of the Stolen Generation. So, but no one had really thought of him as a wheat belt writer. So that's, I guess, what I've done that's different in my book in terms of Jack Davis.
Mm-hmm. It's not uncommon for a literary scholar like yourself to focus on the relationship between literature and place. But why do you think that the wheat belt has not received this type of scholarly reception before?
I think there's a few reasons. I think it's not uncommon. I think literary regionalism in Australia is not quite as developed as it is in North America. But I think we're still, I would argue that we're still evolving ways of doing that. So what's tended to happen in Australia is that we had a generic Bush nationalism, and writing was typically keyed into someone like Albert Facey that I look at was kind of, his story was an archetypal Bush narrative where he went out into the bush and battled against the land. But there's been less work in Australia. There are exceptions to this I could go into, but where writers have been more closely keyed into the concerns of what was going on in particular regions. And Australia, I think, has struggled with the idea of regions and what they meant, because there was a kind of commonality in some ways to the settlement pattern that was taking place across Australia. So it's taking us a little while, I think, to unpick that. So I think my work here with the Wheat Belt is a sustained attempt to try and develop close connections between what's going on in a particular part of Australia through a particular set of circumstances and a particular set of writers. So I think I'm not sure if there's anything. It's intriguing, certainly, that the number of writers to come out of the Wheat Belt is overrepresented. So people like Hewitt and Cowan and Davis and Kinsella, for a relatively sparsely populated and fairly recent region, it's intriguing, in fact, that there are so many good writers to have come out of that place.
That is really interesting. So this is maybe a tough question, but having looked at kind of the past and the literary depiction of the Wheat Belt, what does the future of the Wheat Belt hold?
It's challenging in lots of ways. I mean, the Wheat Belt is, by its own terms, in terms of the production of grain, is successful. And it's even though large parts of land have been lost to salinity and other kinds of land degradation, because of improvements in science, they're still able to grow more wheat than ever, and that's in spite of a generally drying climate. So that in terms of the production of wheat, that in terms of that instrumental goal, you would have to say the future of the Wheat Belt looks good. It's basically been a pretty much an upward trajectory for some time now. The problem is that because of the nature of settlement and the nature of farming, there's less and less people needed to do the work. It's now done on a massive industrial scale with huge machinery. The land is relatively flat, not quite at the stage where the equipment drives itself, but it more or less does. It's all the tractors and the harvesters are driven by GPS tracking and so on. So it's an odd situation, I suppose, where the wheat is coming in more than ever, but there's less and less people. So the towns are dying. So there's a kind of a gap has opened up in the original logic, which was to create a landscape that would settle people and produce wheat. And what we've ended up with perhaps is a landscape which produces wheat without needing people. So that's the human side. There are also a number of, I guess, ecological challenges that continue to present themselves. But for me, the big ecological damage was the sheer fact of doing the wheat belt. That's already taken place. So I think actually we're in a stage, as far as ecology goes, of reparation, which is a good thing.
Tony, I want to thank you for coming on the show today. That's Tony Hughes Daith. His new book is Like Nothing on This Earth, A Literary History of the Wheat Belt. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.